Welcome. I hope everyone had a good lunch. And you're all in the right place. We are here to talk about conversations with people we love and people we don't. I really like this title, Can We Talk? Before we begin, let's remind ourselves just to turn off our cell phones at this point so we don't have any disturbances. And just also to be thinking about in our question and answer phase that we may ask respectful questions. We may be on all different, you know, levels of our faith at this point, and that we may be respectful. This session is 90 minutes long, and so we will keep within the framework of that. I think it's probably ending about 3:30. And let me introduce our speaker of the day. This is Jay Griffith. He is an explorer of ideas and a facilitator of dialogue and relationships through various organizations and nonprofits, including the LDS Church. It looks like he is the lone man standing. I think that Jacob Hess is not going to be here today, and he will let us know the whys on that. But about this presentation, I think we're all maybe familiar in this group of awkward family dinners, conversations that happen at church, Facebook, at work. They're all rife with opportunities to have conversations about sometimes painful and divisive topics. And yet we usually avoid these subjects because we don't know how to feel safe sharing what we really think. In this workshop, Jay will teach proven methods to help bridge these troublesome waters while staying anchored in the essence of Christian ethics. Time will also be spent in small groups practicing with these tools, and I'm excited. Jay, welcome.
Well, thank you for being here. You know, despite giving us this gorgeous room, they probably knew that we weren't going to get a ton of people for this type of topic. So, Jacob, a dear friend of mine who is on the conservative, orthodox end of things, but has worked in this dialogue space a lot longer than I have, texted me late last night and had some urgent family matters to take care of. So I can't give you your money back, but there are other sessions that if you would rather go to rather than this, I will not be offended if you came, you know, primarily to hear Jacob or be here for Jacob. But we're going to soldier on and have some fun and some fun dialogue and hopefully learn some good things. So the first item would be, if you cannot hear me, because sometimes I speak too softly, please don't be afraid to speak up and say, hey, I can't hear you. You can't hear me? Okay, I'll try. I don't know if this volume can, I got to speak right into it, I can tell. It's going to be challenging for me. But thank you. Yeah, please let me know if you can't hear me. So the map of this session today is we're going to start with a brief meditation, how I got to here. Then we're going to circle up for introductions and talk about what is dialogue, creating agreements, creating questions that work, and then we're going to dialogue and come back together for some takeaways. That's the hope. So I'll do my best. Again, I've kind of had to rejigger things, and I apologize for that. So if you don't mind, this is probably more for me than anybody else here, but if you want to get comfortable in your seat and close your eyes, take a few deep breaths, long, deep breaths. Kind of think about the top of your head, your scalp, do a little body scan. Your ears and eyebrows, relax the facial muscles, your mouth, your neck, your shoulders, your stomach, your abdomen, your back and pelvis. Feel that chair. Just kind of settle into it. Your legs, don't forget your arms, your hands, you can wiggle your fingers and just kind of wiggle out any nervous energy. Your feet and your toes, your arches, just kind of feel that ground underneath your feet. And then just kind of focus on your breath as it comes in, as it goes out. All right, thank you. So I'm going to start out sharing a bit of personal information. That's a picture of my fun and crazy family right there. So you can hear a little bit about them, because that's part of why I'm here and how I've gotten kind of involved in this space. And I don't consider myself an expert at this at all. So I am learning as I go. And I know we've all had challenges as individuals and families and in relationships. And you, I'm sure, have some equally diverse and interesting relationships, probably more than me. So I'm an active card-carrying member of the LDS Church. I believe in its efficacy to help prepare people to live full, rich lives now and in the hereafter. I believe in its ability through Jesus Christ to save people temporally and spiritually and foster peace as well as human and environmental flourishing. That doesn't mean I think we've arrived yet at getting all the practices and teachings right. But humanity is messy, and God does the best he or she can with what they've got, right? Us. And I do believe in the Ninth Oracle faith that there are yet many great and important things to be revealed. And that's why I'm kind of excited to still be a member of the church right now, because I see some positive changes in my mind. I often tell people that nearly every good thing has come to me somehow in association with being in this church. My parents met in the church as converts. I met my wife at the church. I met a gentleman that became my mentor and helped me in my profession, choose my profession and become a designer art director. And, I mean, I'm here, obviously, because of the church. So it's been a fairly good ride. Now, I am white, and I am male, and that has given me an advantage, obviously, not just in the church, but in the culture in general. So I recognize that. And it's not been such a fun ride for my LGBT friends and people of different ethnic backgrounds at times. So my three children, on the other hand, they've left the church. My oldest, who is now 31, unofficially left some 13 years ago. And my other son left within a year of coming home from his mission. And that was even though he had a strong testimony before and after his mission. And we didn't bribe him with the mission. It was completely his decision. In fact, he helped pay for a good half of it. My oldest son's wife is quite a remarkable gal, and we've learned to love her and appreciate her point of view. She likes to think and study and research a lot. She is an exotic dancer and has extremely well-done tattoos covering a good part of her body, many of them being from Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged characters from that book. She was libertarian, now she's even moved beyond that. My other son's wife is from Sardinia, Italy. And they and their wives are all atheists. The boys can be a bit evangelical about it. And especially my former missionary son disdained the church and all religion. My oldest son and his wife are also anarchical capitalists, as is my other son. So they're a bit missionary-minded about that also. And they believe in the non-aggression principle, and that as long as we have a government, then you're going to be in violation of that non-aggression principle. You're going to have people forcing you to do things by the end of a gun to do things you don't want to do. So interesting perspectives. And my boys cheered Trump before and after the election. They don't like everything about him, but they like him because he's a disruptor of the system, and that he talks smack against the status quo. And they like that he's calling the media out, particularly the liberal media, and that he speaks for white males. I don't think they voted, from what I remember, they said. But it's interesting. So politically, I'm just a mess. I tend to lean progressive and liberal, but I also have a few libertarian leanings. So my daughter, who we adopted at age 3, talked about leaving the church at age 14 with me, but she hung in there at my request, but really only an outward activity. There were a lot of her activities that did not comport with the church. At age 18, she promptly left. She likes Buddhism and leans liberal and is bisexual. And her life, all of her life, she struggled with attachment disorder. And since her teens, with depression. So prior to the last 3 years, she really struggled with a number of unhealthy lifestyle practices. But since then, she's just done remarkably well. It's been a wonderful thing to see her progress. And it's really just been her. You know, I mean, she's just decided her life was miserable and found some ways to change. So it's been really cool. All my kids have taught me a great deal, and I love and respect them dearly. Much I've learned at their expense, doing things wrong, albeit with good intentions. I've also learned a lot from my good wife, Jane. I'm her second husband. Bart, her first husband, whom she and two of my kids are sealed to, passed away from leukemia in the 10th month of their marriage. Jane and I have struggled quite a bit in our marriage and with our kids, and at times I wasn't sure if we could keep it all together. But in less than a month, we will have been married 35 years. Jane, you want to stand up? Where is she? Oh, I think she went to the other one and then it's going to come back to this one. I was going to have you applaud her for sticking with me that long. Oh, well. So she's been gradually stepping away from the church the last several years, and then just recently decided, after partial activity, to step completely away indefinitely. She told me yesterday, after one of the sessions, that she considers herself a Mormon non-believer now. So I have a lot of friends from a lot of different areas, atheists, post-Mormon, Orthodox Mormon, all these people. And they've all added a great deal of richness and beauty and wonder and curiosity to my life. It's been sometimes a painful ride, particularly with my family, before I learned some things. But I feel like I'm in a much better place now. And I'm grateful for that. And I've served in a lot of callings with a number of bishops and stuff like that. And so I know how that works too. And I have a lot of gratitude for those experiences, and I still serve in the church, and I'm grateful for that. So before I met Jacob Hess, who's a wonderful, wonderful man that I respect and appreciate, and we've had a lot of great conversations. We've had some in my home, living room conversations that have been filmed about LGBT issues and such, and gay marriage. He's the one that kind of got me involved in this more formal conversational dialogue space. And I really wish he could be here. I think you'd enjoy him. But prior to meeting him, I'd been facilitating a couple of discussion groups, one called Think Again and one called Faith Again. And I do with the help of Elizabeth and Mark England at my Liberty Park. Mark's the son of Eugene England. In fact, he was doing a session about his dad, he and his sisters and family. So anyway, these have been rich environments for exploring secular and religious topics and creating a community with quite a bit of diversity, although not near enough political diversity, or we just don't have enough Orthodox Mormons coming, unfortunately. But we're working to improve that because they are important and valued voices. But again, my real work in the area of dialogue and relationships has come through my family. Many conversations with my family, wife, kids, and friends. And you know, learned some painful things, but helpful things about myself that needed changing. And as I kept exploring, praying, studying scripture, questioning everything, and seeking to be meek, I came to a few things I'm very comfortable in expressing great confidence in because of the fruits they've consistently borne. So before we get into some specific dialogue methods that can be helpful in having difficult conversations, I want to share several teachings of Christ that have helped me the most maintain or restore fruitful and loving relationships with this crazy diverse bunch of humans, us. I should say one of those took me over 2 decades to restore. But again, by applying this over time, it's a beautiful thing. This is a dear, intimate business friend. We co-owned a duplex together, and we had a falling out, owned a business together, and it took a long time. But again, by applying this, it came about. So Jesus said, "But let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay. For whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law, and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn thou not away. Ye have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thy enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you." Well, we could dive deep into the meanings of those, but we don't have the time. I do encourage you, as I have, to really ponder those over the next couple of weeks. Really think hard about them. They're challenging scriptures. They're challenging to think about and challenging to live. You know, yesterday I was at work listening to Science Friday, and Alan Alda, founder of Communicating Science at Stony Brook, was talking about how empathy is critical in communicating with people who are different than us. Listening to understand rather than convert is foundational to empathy. This doesn't come natural for most of us. And the principles that Jesus taught about in the scripture that I just read, as well as doing unto others as we would have done to us, challenge us to truly take up our cross and crucify our ego. I found these principles really do work, again, with remarkable consistency. When you walk willingly a mile with someone after being compelled against your will to walk a mile, you have a lot of time to learn about what's going on with that person. As I have suspended judgment of my kids and others and expressed genuine curiosity to understand them and why they feel passionate about, even when it's expressed as hurt, fear, and anger against me or the church and God I love, beautiful things have happened to our relationship. As I've focused on trying to understand and listen to them with empathy and not try to even feel a need to persuade them to my point of view, they in time are more open to listening to my ideas and thoughts. But more importantly, their anger dissipates over time and the relationship is preserved. Foundational to this is my letting go of feeling the need to change people. This can be counterintuitive, being raised in a church where conversion and perfection is constantly preached as our responsibility. But I've learned that that is God's job. My job is simply to love all living things as they are. That love will lead to change as God sees fit, both in me and those I associate with. So why are these relationships so important to us? Because relationships are really the only way we can have a relationship with God as well as with ourselves. And there's nothing more beautiful, enriching, and fulfilling than loving, healthy relationships. The LGBT community has made a lot of inroads in making that point. That's what the 2 great commandments teach us. It's what Matthew 25 teaches us. It's what Fatima preached last night here, with a constant focus on those most rejected and who might be the most difficult for us to love. Kind of this vision of Trump. It is one of the most important reasons I value my membership in the LDS Church. As an organized religion, it constantly invites me to do uncomfortable and challenging things in relationships with all sorts of people that have blessed my life, like be an open ally to the LGBT community. The ironic thing is, these dear people in that community are some of the very easiest to love. I haven't and don't do any of these things perfectly. But amazingly, it still works. I often fail or simply forget what I've learned and what I know to be true. And I can still get caught up in passion and argument with the best of them. But as one who used to try to sometimes manipulate and even control with good intentions, I found you can't have healthy relationships, nor affect for good, trying to change or convert another person. D&C 4 and 121, as well as 1 Corinthians 13, charity, and Moroni 7 on charity, all teach that love and invitation are the only tools that will really work. So if Jesus is our great example, what do we learn from him about having crucial conversations with others? Jesus was a safe place. He was non-judgmental. He was a good listener. Curious about others. Compassionate. Empathetic. Valued the individual more than ideas, institutions, doctrine, cultural norms, or even commandments. And he has blessed my life. So I want to show you a picture here. And while I do, can we rearrange the chairs in just a big arc of a circle so we can have better dialogue? I want you to think about that picture. Some of you have seen that picture before. Some of you have been essential partners. And thanks to my essential partners, friends, three of them are here today. Just one for now would be probably enough. Come on in. We can make the circle bigger if we need to. So as you look at that cartoon, tell me, in my mind, this is where we have to begin in any dialogue, any meaningful dialogue with people. What does it mean to you? What do you see in that? Yeah, so true. Have you had experience with that?
Well, we all have experience.
Well, yeah. Any other thoughts? Please use the mic, if you would, just so we can record what good thoughts you have.
I can't tell, but it looks like he's done all of these paintings, and they're all just a little different. So each one is exactly the same, but he's still painting the same thing.
That's a great observation. I'm not sure if I...
He's painting himself. Isn't that his horn that's in front of it? So it's a self-portrait?
But I don't think he realizes it's a self-portrait, does he? Yeah. So does this image resonate with you? Do you think it's true? Yeah. Funny thing, isn't it? It's interesting. So to understand each other better, especially that we are all from the same planet and species, I'd like us to take a moment to introduce ourselves. Some of the things that I learned at a workshop called Essential Partners this spring, and Dana and Mel and... Becky and Joe, not Mel, Becky and Joe. They were there too. They're kind to come to this. So one of the things I really took away was this idea of think, write, and speak. Maybe it's because I have a tendency to speak before I think. And the writing helps you to do that, to kind of think first about what you might say. So let's take a couple of minutes with the cards and the pen. Just on one side, if you will write down and share something important you'd like us to know about you. So one of the practices they taught us that I liked is, so after someone speaks, Think in your head, if you could count to five slowly, like 5 seconds, before the next person to you begins to speak. Does that make sense? So maybe, Dana, you could start, and then our moderator would go. But if you would wait for 5 seconds, and then let's do that. Part of the reason you do that is so that you can actually think about what was just said. Too often we're thinking about what we're going to say, right, in a conversation immediately after someone speaks. So the practice is to try to actually think about what that person's trying to say to you. And I know this can feel vulnerable to do this, but Brené Brown would say just live with it, do it, right? Yes, would you? Thanks.
Are you starting? Or yeah. Shall I get started?
Let's start with Dana, and then you can go. Thank you.
Okay, except that I'm Adrian, but there was a Dana at Essential Park.
Oh, Adrian, okay. Took this long for you to... I'm terrible at names. I'm so sorry. Why did I think you were Dana? See, now she's being a compassionate person. I don't even call the right name. Adrian's great.
Okay, so thanks. My name's Adrian Gill, and I did do Essential Partners with Jay, but...
Yeah, you have to talk right into the darn thing.
All right, so my name's Adrian Gill, and I did do Essential Partners with Jay. And the thing that I guess I should say is that the thing I've been amazed about lately in my life is how much I am willing to learn. I always... believed in that you can't teach an old dog new tricks, and I have old dogs, and I've been very unsuccessful at teaching them new tricks. But I don't know whether it's because I have so much more free time in my life after raising children that I have time to learn, or whether it's that I've seen my children grow and do things differently than me, and their lives have all turned out wonderfully, and so I have a greater desire to learn the things that I didn't do.
So we're waiting 5 seconds.
Well done.
And then we're going to just go around the circle.
And by the way, anybody cannot do this if you don't feel comfortable doing it. So you don't feel like you have to share.
Okay, Jay, first, will you clarify exactly what it was you wanted us to say after our name? Just something about ourselves?
What would you like people to know about you?
Okay. This is what I thought of. I'm Becky. And I just wanted to say I'm so happy to be here to enjoy this experience, to learn and progress and incorporate understanding of key concepts about communication. And I think I also want to say that it's amazing. What miracles can come about in your life from love.
I'm Joe. One of the most important things about me is that I'm married to Becky. But the thing that came to my mind, and I'm not sure why, maybe it's just kind of the experience today, is I led to reflect. I'm a great believer in diversity, whether that be religious diversity or social, racial, diversity, cultural, sexual, even political, even though, you know, I'm wearing the LDS Democratic T-shirt. Even political diversity, I believe that there's a lot of strength and unity in diversity. And if we are willing to tolerate, be tolerant towards each other, listen to each other, rather than judge, I think we can learn a lot from each other. Like Jay, I'm not sure I can learn much from Trump, but there are some that I might be able to learn some from, and maybe even him, but... there's a lot of diversity, a lot of blessings in diversity, and I think that's important for me today.
The sounds told me it was my turn. My name's Josh. The thing that came to my mind today and what I wrote down is that my spirituality did not dim when I left the church. In fact, when I finally lived true to my spirit, I soared.
My name is John Ogden, and I just thought to share that I'm currently working on a project that is about combining the best of the world's religious or wisdom traditions, the best excerpts from those traditions. So.
Sorry, that doesn't.
I'm Craig, and I think you guys are taking this far too seriously. If you want to know something about me, or here's the one thing I'll tell you about me. I'm the grandfather to 14, 10 boys and 4 girls. I work at that job, and most of them think something fun is going to happen when I walk in the room.
I'm Alan, and I feel like I'm a pretzel as I'm trying to. I'm going to stand.
There you go.
There
Please,
we go.
Stand up. Yeah.
I love very easily, and I don't talk about myself very well, and I am delighted to be hearing all about you. And I'm not going to tell you anything about me.
My name is Tamara, and I'm related to those two guys right there. The one who just stood up is my husband, and the other's my brother. And my brother and I are what's called Irish twins. We are only 10 months and 3 days apart. So his birthday's August 9th, mine's June 12th of the following year. So about as close as you can get them. And if I described myself, I would say I'm a lifelong learner. I like to read, take classes, learn all kinds of things.
My name's Mary, and that's kind of the same thing I had, and a little bit with Dana. I mean, Adrian. Is that now that I have time, I'm learning lots of new things, and I'm enjoying learning that. And then I also just love to laugh. I love when I'm just enjoying something and feeling that joy.
You need that guy as a grandpa, right?
And I'm a grandma, too.
Oh, you're your grandma.
My name is Jason. I find it's a truism that the more I know, the more I find out I don't know, which makes me a very fascinated person. And the fascination is mostly a coping mechanism because that's the least painful way I've figured out how to deal with it.
Thank you.
Oh, no, it's my turn. I'm Luke, and I find out I don't do very well feeling vulnerable. So I suppose that's why I'm here, to work on that. I'll figure out if there's anything important about me I want to share.
It's just fine.
My name is Rachel, and I don't particularly like to share things about myself. I don't like people to know things about me, I guess. But since it's a safe group here, I'll just say about me, I feel passionate about issues of social justice, and I work as an attorney practicing criminal defense in the federal system.
Thank you. I'm just not sure if I've been good at monitoring the 5-second rule. Sorry. We started out good.
I'm Colleen, and I'm like a lot of you, I don't like to share things about myself much. This is my beautiful daughter, Haley. I'll share that. She's awesome. I love my family, and I'd rather be outdoors than indoors, but this is a lovely room. It's a nice compromise.
So, yeah. You can walk really slow, Haley, to the slow motion.
I am Haley. I am compassionate and gentle, but if needs be, I am super fierce and fearless.
Nice.
My name's Dave, and I'm a white man, but I can't accept the old part of that. I've been active all my life, love to backpack, hike, sports, all that thing. And it's very frustrating when your body starts to fall apart. So I've been very frustrated of recent years. I am the father of 7 wonderfully diverse children who challenge me and push me. And so I'm looking forward to having a conversation about how best to bring out the best in them.
Nice. 5 seconds.
I'm Tresha, and I too am a card-carrying member of the church, always with progressive views. I guess I am a believer in big tent Mormonism, and I'm here to stay to try to help facilitate that. And yeah, that's basically, I'm from Seattle, and it's wonderful to be back here in the Wasatch Front.
Thank you.
My name is Joanna Tholstrom, and my family and I just recently moved back to the United States from England. We've been over there the last 3 years, serving with the United States military, and I am in culture shock, in a very good way, to be back in America where you can be around like-minded people of my roots. It's been so wonderful the last week. Realizing that practicing vulnerability is a practice. It's something that I don't think is meant to come easily. I think that we are to practice it. And I guess what I'd like you to know about me is I am deeply empathetic, probably to my weakness. I feel so deeply, and I feel for others so deeply, and I think that I know that that is what has brought me here today. And here we are.
Thank you. Yeah, that's great. Because Dana / Adrian already went, didn't she? So how do you, if you can think about when you came into the room initially and how you felt and then how you feel now, is there a little bit of a difference? Any comments or thoughts on that? I know I feel, as a presenter, more comfortable because I feel like I know you a little bit better. And it's one of the things that I like about this is that not one of you gave your profession as something that you thought was really important to know. I think that's neat. I think that's a beautiful thing that you shared what you were most passionate about, what really drove you. I guess you did, didn't you? But that's because that feeds your passion. That's your work, right? Yeah. So when you think in terms of speaking with people, particularly that are different than you, creating a space that you can be comfortable with first is pretty important, and that you can get to know each other on a deeper level and see some maybe shared humanity. Does that make sense? So that's one of the first things that needs to happen, is creating that safe space. Part of that, let's first talk real briefly about dialogue. I'm just going to read you a quick paragraph. This is the manual we got at Essential Partners. It says what dialogue is. The dialogues that Essential Partners designs, and so I'm kind of blending a number of things. There'll be some websites at the end that you can check into. I'm part of an organization with Utah Hess, part of the team called Utah Village Square, utah.villagesquare.org. And we've tried to facilitate communications both larger and smaller within the community. And there's a number of ways to go about this. So I'm just kind of pulling together several things that I thought might be helpful for you today. So the primary goal in a good dialogue is to pursue mutual understanding rather than agreement or immediate solutions. Again, this is hard because usually we want someone to be persuaded to our point of view when, you know, we feel passionately about different things, right? And so we're trying to convert them to our point of view. Or we're working on a problem, and we make becoming at that problem differently, and we want to throw out solutions. This is at least from what I've observed, a guy thing. I mean, we like to fix stuff. So again, that's where the empathy can be really important first. So as participants pursue this goal, they sometimes decide to pursue other goals. For example, dialogue groups sometimes decide to become better informed together or to build consensus about ways that they can act on shared values. But dialogue is not. Dialogue is distinct from debate. In fact, participants in dialogue often explicitly agree to set aside persuasion and debate so they can focus on mutual understanding. And dialogue is different from mediation, conflict resolution, and problem solving, although it can come as a prelude to any of those. So participants listen and are listened to with care. They speak and are spoken to in a respectful manner. They share airtime so that all speakers can be heard. They learn about the perspectives of others. They reflect on their own values. One of the things that is kind of critical, if you're trying to prepare yourself to have a difficult conversation with someone, maybe it's a family member or a friend about a particular thing, is to come at this with some mutual agreements. So let me talk about that. In other words, it's what do you feel, what are the agreements that need to be made so that you'll feel comfortable in sharing? So some of you, we hadn't gotten to the point where you felt comfortable yet, which is okay. Sorry, I'm just looking for my page. Here it is. So we avoid making grant. So these are some, ideally, let's do it this way first before I read these to you. What would you need to feel comfortable to talk with someone in that space that you know feels pretty strongly differently than you? What do you feel like you would need to make that work? Good.
If you both do that, I think that goes a long way to making you feel not threatened.
Yeah, I agree. Allison, there's a seat here by your buddy.
I think that sometimes it's maybe not even anything said. It's more of just you can feel an openness from someone. It might come from their body language. It might come from just what you see in their eyes. But if we could just exude Mm-hmm. Feeling of openness without any words.
Okay.
Something that's just, I think, just felt.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Other thoughts about what kind of agreements we can all agree on before we have a conversation about difficult things? Yeah.
Adrian?
Good, good. Any other thoughts? So, let me just read to you what Essential Partners talks about as some sample agreements. And we've covered a couple of them. We will avoid making grand pronouncements and instead connect with what we know personally and believe in our experiences that influences in our lives and particular sources of information. We refrain from characterizing the views of others in a critical spirit, keeping in mind that we are here to understand each other, not to persuade each other. And we will not try to represent a whole group. We speak for ourselves. We will not ask others to represent, defend, or explain an entire group. We will listen with resilience. This can be really critical. Hanging in when we hear something that is hard to hear. And as was mentioned, we will share airtime and refrain from interrupting others. We will pass or pass for now if we're not ready to or willing to respond. And there's no explanation needed. We talked about confidentiality, and we'll honor that request. We'll avoid making negative attributes about the beliefs, values, and motives of other participants. You only say that because. When tempted to do so, we will consider the possibility of testing the assumption we are making by asking a question. Why is that important to you? Does that make sense? Does that sound like something that you could agree to for a conversation? Okay, good, good. So another critical thing is the questions that we ask one another. You've probably been in a situation where you've been asked a question, a leading question, or a question to try to get you to, you know, antagonize you, to get you to bite. So let me talk just briefly about that. I know I've got it folded down. Somewhere. There we go. Thoughtlessly crafted questions can unintentionally provoke the old conversation. Because, again, if you think about most of the people you're probably going to converse about something on a deep level that you disagree, you likely know them already. And you've already had the conversation and it didn't go well. That's often what happens. But it could be a stranger. Questions that are rhetorical, leading, or biased, as well as questions that stress polarities or dichotomies, are especially unhelpful. In most situations, questions that have a simple yes or no answer are unlikely to advance the dialogue. That's kind of a no-brainer, but it's good to remember as you think about questions. So if you turn your cards over, think about, because we're going to do some role-playing. In fact, let's do it this way because of time. If you could divide up into about groups of four or five and just circle your chairs, or you can go to another area of the room. And I want you to work on creating one good question that your group can discuss. And I want you to think of it in terms of the person or people that you would like to have this conversation with but are struggling to do so. We're getting divided up there well. So your instruction is to come up with a question and maybe think in your mind, try to gel within a quick amount of time a question that's important to you that you would like to talk about with someone that you disagree with. Does that make sense? So, I mean, maybe it's an LGBT issue, maybe it's someone who supports Trump. Maybe it's a particular policy in the LDS Church that you disagree with, but you have parents or friends or siblings that feel strongly that it's the right thing that the church is doing, or I don't know, there's any number of things that come to mind that could be issues that you want to talk about. Climate change, environment, social justice was brought up earlier. So one more minute to form the question. It's kind of fun because you guys are already dialoguing, I can tell. But let's try to come up with a question, and then you can dialogue some more. Okay, you got about 5 seconds to wind down. Okay, I don't want to interrupt any crucial conversations, but let's pause for a minute. Yeah. Moderators, if you think you have a question for your group, will you share what that is? So you could pick what you guys were talking about. So, Adrian, you guys seem very engaged. And then if you would use the, I did use the mic. So what's fun about this?
I thought you were my friend.
Well, yeah, I thought you were my friend. That's why I'm letting you do that. So real quick, isn't it interesting how quickly just the simple thing about trying to come up with even the question, I mean, it was fun to see all of you so engaged in dialogue, you know, coming through things. Hopefully you were, you know, trying to think about the things we just talked about, kind of giving a rest between speaking, right? Giving people a chance to finish what they're talking about and then pausing before you jump in. These are challenging skills to practice, but the more you do them, I think the better they work. So, Adrian, what are you guys talking, going to dive deep into, you think?
We were discussing how to approach an LDS bishop with concerns in your responsibilities with the youth, that maybe the opportunity to express doubt or differences of opinion amongst the youth with their leaders is not being accepted, or there's not a lot of freedom to do that.
That's a great topic. And so how, so maybe you guys can hone that down and think about what would you say to the bishop? You know, and try to write that down quickly so you have more time to talk about it. But picture yourself going to your bishop with that genuine concern. Maybe you need to email him first to set it up. One of the things Essential Partners talks about is prep work before you ever have the conversation. So it may take a little effort and work to prepare the ground to even have a comfortable conversation. Or a safe conversation about that. Haley? Did you pass the baton? That's fine.
All
to
right,
the least vulnerable feeling guy.
Thank you for that. Okay.
By the mic.
So we were talking about family members with maybe differences in ideology and the difficulties with coming to terms with that, both people, and how we need to focus more on how people are feeling as opposed to pushing your ideology on, because people tend to entrench themselves into their beliefs. So you don't necessarily have to come to an agreement, but more of an understanding or an acceptance, a peaceful feeling that things are going to turn out in the end.
I like that. So maybe you guys can craft a question, thinking about someone in your lives that you would love to say that to. How would you go about that? What would be the question that doesn't put them on the defensive, so that they could actually hear your heart and you could hear theirs, right? So maybe you guys could work on that. I like that. Good stuff. Right over here, Mr. Grandpa, the sense of humor.
Funny you should use a label to refer to me.
That's a good call on me. You called me out. Good for you.
Well, we were also noticing how you labeled your children, some of them and not other ones.
Thank you.
And so our question is...
That's very good.
How do we get past labels when we're talking about any kind of issue, but especially church issues?
I like that. So is there a particular person, maybe me, huh, that you want to address that conversation with, someone in your mind that would be helpful? Or is there a way to craft that so you can just keep dialoguing about? So, I mean, ideally, you're thinking about, in your life, someone that you need to have a conversation with, or would like to have a conversation with about something that's hard, so that you guys could have either repair a relationship or have a better relationship. Does that make sense? So maybe you can hone on that. I like that. And thanks again for mentioning that. That's a very good point about not labeling people. It's kind of hard sometimes to describe where you're coming from or people that you know and love without using some kind of terminology, but I'm sure there's better ways to do it.
Well, we weren't saying it was wrong. It's just so automatic.
It is.
Talking about volatile issues.
Yeah.
You say a word and they have a visual.
Mm-hmm.
And you say you're saying the same word, but you have a different visual. So establishing what those labels are, so that you
That's a great point. That's a great point.
See, understanding their label and your label.
Yeah. Yeah. And see, I think that, again, illustrates the value of different points of view and asking, you know, because that's how we learn from each other. I mean, some of the best things you might walk away with today are not from me, but maybe from what you've heard from each other. I mean, that's my hope, that the interaction with each other and what you've heard from each other will be meaningful for you. All right. Our last group over here. Moderator.
We were trying to fashion a question about for those who have decided to leave the church, especially the youth, younger generation, and how you would approach gaining an understanding. It kind of goes off, and I don't see your name, but Josh, it goes off Josh's comment that his spirituality soared once he left the church. So based on a statement like that, our question would be, so your spirituality has soared, you've done better after you left the church. Tell me more about that. Help me to understand what you're talking about, what you mean by that.
I love that.
And then try to gain some understanding that way.
Yeah, so keep asking questions. I heard that going on over here too, this gentleman. You were asking clarifying questions, right, to have deeper understanding. So that's good. We don't have a lot of time left, so I'm just going to let you guys work on what you were talking about and dialogue some more as you'd like. Or if you want to shift gears and dialogue about a different topic, but spend some time trying to practice those principles of what you heard about honoring each other's feelings and conversation, you know, and pausing and thinking, kind of like we did our introductions, kind of letting things settle in between rather than just wanting to jump in and say something, but trying to really hear a person out. You know, the difficulty in, and this is what we found in the village square, and we'd have like 80 people come, it's the challenge of having Think Again and Faith Again, is typically very like-minded people come together in these groups. So it's really hard at times to practice the real thing here, because we tend to be like-minded in a lot of ways. I mean, Sunstone tends to attract more progressive liberal people, and there's a lot of efforts out there to try to engage our, you know, more conservative fellow human beings, and I think that's of great value. And so, when you leave today, I'm going to give you again some information that you can use to try to do this on your own, and I think you'll find value. But anyway, go ahead, and it was fun to just watch you guys interact and have a great conversation. So see if you can dive back in now. So if you can kind of circle around a little bit, and you know, don't have to get it all exact, but just a little bit larger thing there. So real quick, anybody willing to share something they may have gleaned that they thought was worth a good takeaway? Hopefully somebody had one thing. And you have to turn that mic on, because I turned it off when I sat there. Something that anybody wants to share? Do you walking out of this room with anything helpful? Oh, John? Yeah, make sure you turn it on. Thank you, and talk right in it.
I appreciate the reminder, and I really appreciate this time that we had together to think about this topic. One thing that came to me to mind is just really consistently entering dialogue with the understanding that winning the dialogue means the other person says, yeah, that is what I think.
You got me, yeah.
Rather than, yeah, I now believe what you believe, right?
Exactly.
So I feel like that if we can just reframe, like this conversation is going to be successful if we can just get to the point that I say, I feel understood. The end.
Yeah.
Right.
Beautiful. Thank you. Anybody else? They want to share something that came up within their group that was meaningful or helpful?
We have to further this topic, we have invented a new game, a small group game. And the game is you begin by saying some label like anarchal capitalist. Then the next person has to reply with another label like libertarian on steroids. And then the next person has to reply with another label. And you keep going until you exhaust yourself.
Any other things that want to be shared that you thought or felt?
So our group was discussing how to approach a bishop to help him to understand the need for the needs of the doubts of the congregation, and also how to engage to understand, not to fix or alienate or vilify people who have doubt, but to try to work with the bishop and the ward council. And I'm really looking forward to perusing those websites that you've got for us to help facilitate a dialogue like this, because it's really empowering, and it's so different from what I see in the way we deal with issues in our congregation. Kind of like from a ward council perspective. So.
Yeah. Richard Osler is a former bishop. I don't know if you got to hear him yesterday, but he had a lot of lovely things to say. And it's true. I mean, and we can help do this, but we're not good at a church at listening. We're really good at preaching, right? And that's probably not just our church, but a lot of churches. And I think if we were better listeners, we would get a lot further, wouldn't we? So that's, yeah, a lot of it, that's good. So just real quick. So again, think about what dialogue is. I think John described well what we were hoping for, is mutual understanding. Try to create an agreement, a safe space. Thinking about how your questions might come across to someone else. Are they trying to evoke an argument or prove something? Are they rhetorical, or are they just genuine questions? I want to understand you. That's the kind we want. Thank you so much. Let me just share a quick couple of quotes here. And then I've got some cards up here you could take, and also cards for living room conversations that are helpful. So Carl Sagan said, both skepticism and wonder are skills that need honing and practice. And we can do that in dialogue. Rachel Noemi Rimmon, a loving silence often has far more power to heal and to connect than the most well-intentioned words. And sometimes that's what we need to do most, is just be quiet and listen. Thank you so much for being willing to engage. I really appreciate you being here. Thanks.